Genesis chapter 20. And while you are turning there, just a couple of odds and ends, let me mention that tonight we are looking forward to having B.J. Nibby is going to be presenting to us and also preaching and just giving us an update. It's good to have he and Arzu and Eliora. I think she's back there as well. And good to have them with us here for a couple more days, and I trust that you're praying for them. Also, by the way, we ought to be certainly praying here for the situation in Israel, and let's be praying again for those who, of course, serve and those who represent us over in that country. Let's make sure we do that as well. If you have your Bibles here, Genesis chapter 20, I'm going to let you remain seated, but I want you to notice here, verse number 9, our text this morning of a sermon I've entitled Anatomy of a Backslider begins in verse 9 by saying, "Then Abimelech called Abraham and said unto him, What hast thou done unto us? And what have I offended thee, that thou hast brought on me and on my kingdom a great sin? Thou hast done deeds unto me that ought not to be done. And Abimelech said unto Abraham, What sawest thou that thou hast done this thing? And Abraham said, Because I thought, Surely the fear of God is not in this place, and they will slay me for my wife's sake. And yet indeed she is my sister, she is the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother, and she became my wife. And it came to pass, when God caused me to wander from my father's house, that I said unto her, This is thy kindness which thou shalt show unto me at every place whither ye come, say of me, He is my brother." The doldrums is a stagnant condition. It's really found around the equator, where all of a sudden you will find a situation sometimes where all of a sudden the surface winds are stopped. Now the upper winds, that's another story, but the doldrums are just simply that disparity where all of a sudden you find that there's nothing moving, and it's really a dangerous thing. It's a dangerous thing for sailors that find themselves all of a sudden, they're stuck, and they can be stuck for days, they can be stuck for weeks on end. And the truth is that oftentimes the ending of a doldrum, if it ends even after a couple of weeks, is oftentimes explosive. Literally what you have is all of a sudden the weather changes instantly and you go from extreme calm to very disruptive storms like you cannot believe. And so doldrums are a time where nothing moves. You know, another way of saying it, because I liken here our story to spiritual doldrums, or we would use another term, and you've oftentimes maybe heard this, and it's the term backsliding. Now, technically, backsliding, I happen to believe, is not just simply going backwards, but it's sometimes when we're just not moving. Because the sure way to go backward is stop making progress forward. And that's exactly what happens. An interesting story here in chapter number 20, where a pagan acts like the Christian, but the Christian acts like a pagan. The roles are completely reversed. And we notice the story begins in verse number 1 that the Bible says, "And Abraham journeyed from thence toward the south country and dwelt between Kadesh and Shur and sojourned in Gerar. And Abraham said of Sarah his wife, She is my sister. And Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah." Now, Gerar is in an area today we would know as Gaza. It's been in the news. That's where the rockets have been fired from. From this, and by the way, it's a small area. Geographically, Israel's a small country. But Gaza is a stretch that in between Egypt and Israel, it's only 25 miles long and only 7 miles wide. It's a tiny, that's why it was called originally the Gaza Strip. It's a small section. But it's in this area that there one time was a kingdom and a king of Gerar, a man by the name of Abimelech. And the Bible tells us that when Abraham and Sarah, when they entered this area, that Abraham and Sarah covenanted with each other and decided, well, we're going to lie about who you are. And Abraham said to his wife, I want you to say you're my sister. And Sarah, she agreed and said, I will say that I am your sister. And so this comes in. And by the way, it was not uncommon. The fear of the situation was that it was not uncommon. For kings, they had a lot of liberty. Women were not treated right. It was a vulnerable time. And as such, you can understand in one sense, even though it was wrong, why Abraham would have feared that he would have just simply been overrun And maybe this king would have said, well, this is a beautiful woman, and it was not uncommon for them to take many women into their harem. And so he lies about it. Now, if all of this, by the way, sounds familiar, it should, because this is the second time we know that this has happened. You see, deja vu, 23, 24 years earlier, Abraham and Sarah did the exact same thing in a place called Egypt. And now they're doing it in this place called Gerar. Now, this morning, what I want to do is I want to just simply tackle three questions, and I want to answer them, and I want to see especially what we can learn. But first of all, I want to tackle the question, why did Abraham lie again? What was behind that? Secondly, how God judged him, but also in his mercy, how God protected. And then finally, thirdly, what can we learn from this story? Because you and I guarantee you, we will go through some times. If we will live for many, many years, we're going to have some peaks, some valleys. We're going to have some times where we're up, sometimes we're down. But the dangerous times come when we're in the doldrums. Maybe you're here this morning. Maybe you'd have to say, you know, Pastor, that's me. I'm sort of in a funk. I just don't seem like I'm growing. I don't seem like I'm progressing. Then this message is for you, but it's also for those of us that need to be wary that this can come at any time. You know, lest you think, you know, well, boy, I tell you what, I've got it made because, you know, I'm pressing on the upward way. Well, you hang in there. There's going to come a time where all of a sudden things are still and things all of a sudden are not moving forward. Now, let's notice, first of all, why Abraham lied again. Now, Abraham's lie was a clever half-truth, which, let's be honest, a half-truth is a whole lie. There is no such thing, even though people use the term, as a little lie or a little white lie. All lying is sin. God says, tell the truth and don't bear false witness. And yet Abraham rationalizes, and notice in verse number 12, the lie is this, and yet indeed she is my sister and she is the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother, and she became my wife. Now, who was Sarah? Well, back in those days, it was not uncommon to marry a relative. And especially here, a sister. They had the same father, but a different mother. And so she is his half-sister. Now, Abraham, verse number 13, told Sarah to lie. So it wasn't just Abraham. It's his wife. They together are plunging into lying again. But also a factor, as I thought about this story, one of the factors that actually makes this sort of a cover-up, and it makes it a little bit more believable to Abimelech. It's not seen in the story, but you have to imagine and understand, even though it doesn't appear in the story, that Abraham at this time has Hagar, and he has Ishmael. Now, who are they? Well, Hagar had become a wife after she was the servant to Sarah. And remember that Abraham and Sarah thought, well, God needed some help. And so another problem, that he complicates it and he marries Hagar. She's another wife. So in other words, he's got, and we think Ishmael's probably about 13 years of age. Now that means that here's Abraham and he's walking into town, and along with him are Sarah and also Hagar, but Hagar has a son. So what is Abimelech going to think? Oh, which one is the wife? Well, the one with the son. And so naturally, he says, well, the other one must be, okay, sister, that's what he says. So it's believable. Again, it's wrong. But now, why in the world did Abraham and why did Sarah, why did they lie and lie again? In the first case, I want you to notice, it was because of fear. It's because of fear, because Abraham feared for his life. In verse number 11, he said, surely the fear of God is not in this place. And he made a lot of assumptions. You know, he assumed, he said, the fear of God is not in this place. Now, that there are some Bible teachers that they make Abimelech out to be a true believer, and others that say, no, he was just a pagan, but he did at least recognize God. I would be among those in the second category. Now, I don't think that we can say that Abimelech, that boy, he is a God-fearing, and you know that he understood everything, but he did acknowledge God's existence, and he certainly did after this dream that came to him. But he assumed many things. Abraham did. He assumed the worst. He assumed that Abimelech, and there's nothing in the story to indicate that Abimelech would have actually killed him over getting this woman, Sarah. Now, she's unusually beautiful, even at the age that she is. but it's a fear that led him to lie. But secondly, it's also faithlessness. You see, opposite of fear is faith. And there's no faith in Abraham. He has a lack of faith. He did not trust God. Now, let me just say that your theology practically is going to be one of two. You either are going to have a practical theology that says big God and little me, or you're going to say little God and big me. It's one of the two. How big is your God? You know, when your God is small, then you are going to be afraid of a lot of things. I would tell you, by the way, that's one of the things that should have helped us get through this pandemic this last year. How big has your God been? How big is your God? You might be facing a lot of challenges at this time. There might be a lot of problems. There might be problems in your marriage. There might be problems with finances. You're trying to figure out how to pay the bills. You're trying to figure out how to fix different things that have happened in different relationships. You're worried about the future. I mean, good grief. You know, it seems like the world is going to war and the world is falling apart. And you might be afraid. How do you get over that faith? How big is your God? You know, can I just simply mention blue whales? Blue whales are the largest animals that have ever lived on this planet. Now, by the way, if you've ever seen a blue whale, consider yourself lucky. They are very rare to spot, even though they are so big. They're said to be over 100 feet long. They will weigh upwards of 200 tons. And it is said that they are so big that their tongue is literally comparable to an elephant. Their heart can weigh as much as your car. These animals, these creatures in the sea, are so big, the biggest that have ever lived on this planet, that they will eat, it is said, up to 8 tons of krill a day. Well, that's quite a lunch. And yet, they are rarely seen. That they're on the endangered species list. That there's some 25,000 in the entire world on the planet. And yet, these are extremely rare, even though they are so big. You know, God is sort of similar to that. God is not always seen. He isn't seen with our physical eyes. But he is seen through the eyes of faith. He's there. He's there all the time. He may be under the surface of the circumstances. He may be obscured from our vision because we just don't realize, but he's there. He is certainly there. We have a big God and a God who can and will do what he wills. Now listen, that's why you have to think about this, that this was such an awful thing for Abraham. He was going into this world, this promised land, and he was supposed to be representing God. Did you know that, by the way, I can make a case about this, that, listen, wrong is wrong, and certainly it's even from that standpoint, but I happen to think that if you are a believer and you do wrong, it's worse. It's worse. What can we say about Abraham and his sin? Certainly it was cowardly, he feared. Certainly it was calculated. He made plans. This was not simply a spontaneous thing. He planned. He planned it this time. He planned it 23, 24 years ago. In addition, it was deceitful. It jeopardized Sarah's purity. You realize that he put her in an awful position, a vulnerable position. He allowed this to go forward. All of a sudden, she's actually taken. She becomes part of the house of Abimelech. And it misled an innocent man, and it could have turned out worse. It certainly dishonored God. But one of the worst things about this sin is it really wrecked the testimony that Abraham should have had. Folks, listen, you ought to care about your testimony today. And you ought to care about the testimony of God in our community, in our area. And that's why we've got to be truthful. We've got to be right. The world is always watching. You know, they probably watched when you got up this morning and when you left your house to come to church. They probably said, where are they going? We're sleeping in. Why are those folks leaving on Sunday? Don't you know that Sunday is a recreational day? It's a day of rest and leisure and doing my thing. And they probably watched. And, you know those neighbors. They're watching everything you do. When believers do wrong, their wrong, I believe, is worse than the wrong of unbelievers because you and I have a testimony that we have to uphold. And the world expects Christians. And by the way, that doesn't mean that Christians are perfect. And we certainly are going to let down our guard. We certainly are going to stumble. There's no mistake about that. But listen, the danger of backsliding is we have a rotten testimony when we do. How much better would have been if Abraham would have told the truth? If he would have trusted God. And by the way, if he would have trusted God to protect him. To protect him. That brings me to point out, number two, how God judged him and also how God protected him. I happen to believe that if Abraham would have trusted God, he would have had the same protection no matter what. But he would have also had a testimony. Notice in verse number 8, the Bible says, therefore Abimelech rose early in the morning and called all his servants and told all these things in their ears. And the men were sore afraid. Then Abimelech called Abraham and said to him, what hast thou done unto us? And what have I offended thee that thou hast brought on me and on my kingdom a great sin? Thou hast done deeds unto me that ought not to be done. Now, by the way, as happened in Egypt, God allowed Abraham to make his bed and now lie in it. He allowed him to make this mistake, and God certainly protected him then. In this case here, God came to Abimelech in a dream. And in the dream, he basically said, and I'm going to just shorten it, he said, you are a dead man if you don't put that woman back with that man. And Abimelech said, what? What did I do? I've been innocent. And God said, I know you have, but I protected you from even doing anything to her. But you're a dead man if you don't return her. She belongs to somebody else. She's Abraham's wife. God revealed to Abimelech in a dream. So Abimelech wakes up the next morning. God has warned him and said, now listen, you'd better return her. And sure enough, as soon as it's light, he returns her to Abraham, but he scolds Abraham. Now, have you ever had a good scolding? Have you ever had a well-deserved one, and one that, I mean, you really felt so little? That's exactly what happens here. We find that Abimelech, he scolds Abraham. And by the way, it's a shame that his scolding comes at the hand of a heathen man, a man that may not even know the Lord. It's shame that here an unsaved, possibly, person is the one that has to correct him. But God has a way of bringing things to light. And by the way, I think about that verse. If there's a verse that I've said many, many times over and over again was true as I grew up in my youth, in my childhood, in my teen years, in my young adult years, it's been throughout my life. The verse is, be sure your sin will find you out. You know what? That is so true. The Bible says this, he that covereth his sin shall not prosper. You know, our military uses night vision goggles. And night vision is a technology that is now available, in which case you can see things that clearly at the, you know, what might be done here in the shadows might be done in darkness, but you can see them clearly. God basically puts night goggle visions on our sin. He brings it out. And I want you to notice how God protected this man, Abraham, even though he messed up. Again, he's in the spiritual doldrums. He's backsliding. He's not progressing. He goes and he lies about who Sarah is. But there are four ways that God protected him. First of all, I put down by warning Abimelech in that dream. God didn't have to do that. That was actually very merciful of him. But he warned him. Secondly, he struck him with a disease. Notice in verse number 17 that something happened with Abimelech. We don't know exactly what, but the Bible says that Abraham prayed to God and God healed Abimelech. Something caused him to be sick. Something caused him to be immobile. Something caused him to not want to get out of bed. And so he had some kind of a disease. Something, God brought the disease. And by the way, God can. Thirdly, God affected all of the wombs in Abimelech's household. And not only does it say that Abimelech needed to be healed, but it also says in verse number 17, and his wife and his maidservants and they that bear children, for the Lord had fast closed up all the wombs of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. Why is this important? Well, listen, this got Abimelech's attention. You see, it was very important for kings in those days to carry on the kingdom by having heirs, by having sons, by having children, by having those who could take over when they died. And the fact that now all of a sudden none of his household, nobody's having babies, there's no babies being born. We have just basically cut the population growth to zero. Well, Abimelech says this is not good for future. And so Abimelech is really kind of caught here. But in addition, I just simply mention here that one of the ways that God protects, I believe this happens time and time again, is by exposing this sin publicly. And by the way, you think back, even in your life, how many times have you messed up? How many times have you miscalculated? How many times have you sinned? And be sure your sin will find you out. Now, sometimes our foolishness is brought to light. Yeah, I remember, for instance, now I've told this story before, but when I was a teenager, I can remember one time. Now I grew up, I didn't grow up here in Rosemount, but I grew up in southern Minnesota in a little town called New Ulm. And when I was 16 years of age, Dad took a transfer up to the St. Paul 3M plant. And so I still had my friends down in New Ulm. And I can remember one time we were living up here in the cities. I was a teenager, 17 years of age. By the way, do you remember when you were 17 and you thought you were invincible? Do you remember that? I remember that. I thought, you know, nothing can harm me. Fire, you know, cold, nothing, you know, bullets, nothing. Nothing can penetrate. I can do anything. That's at least the way I thought. And I was 17 years of age, and I had a planned trip to go visit my friends down in New Ulm, and I was going to go there on a Friday. It just so happened that there was a blizzard. A real, and by the way, I'm not talking about, you know, sometimes even, I have to tell you, the terminology sometimes even with the weather today, to me seems a little bit wimpy compared to the blizzards that we had back then. This was a real one. You know, not one where, you know, we get a, you know, few inches and everybody cancels everything and everybody stays home. Schools canceled everything. We never hardly canceled school when I was growing up. But I remember, you know, 17 years of age, and this was a real, real blizzard. And I can remember that my parents said, Dave, you know, you ought not to go, you ought not to go. And I said, oh, please, please, please. And I finally got my way. And against my parents' better judgment, against my father's better judgment, my dad finally said, okay, Dave, go. And he wasn't happy about it. But I wanted to travel and see my friends. Now, you know, again, this is like an hour, hour and a half trip normally. But I began to travel, and I was on Highway 169. Many of you know the route, you know, heading south there, you know, from Shakopee all the way down to St. Peter. And from St. Peter, I was going to cross over and go the county roads back to New Ulm, about 29 miles. And I can remember I was traveling, and everything was going fine. It was snowing. It was really obscured, and everything was fine until I got to St. Peter, and I began to go the back roads. They hadn't been plowed. And I'll never forget, I just got outside of St. Peter a little ways, a few miles, when all of a sudden my car met a mountain in the middle of the road. I literally drove into a snowbank about 6 feet high. And the car stopped. I somehow was able to extricate myself out of the car, out of the snowbank, in the middle of the road. I'm telling you, we used to have real blizzards back then. Ones where that kind of stuff happened. And I'll never forget, as I had to walk back into a town in the middle of a blizzard, I had to call my dad, and I had to tell my dad, Dad, there's a problem. You know, that has been, you know, well over 40 years ago. But I remember just like it was yesterday. And sometimes when I am thinking of doing something foolish, I remind myself, remember when? Remember when? Remember when you were strong-willed, and remember when you had to have your way? You remember when you wanted to drive? Remember when you drove into that snowbank? You remember that? I'll tell you what, folks, sometimes the best thing we can have happen is to fail. And by the way, can I just a word, I say this oftentimes, but you that are parents of children, stop keeping your children from failing. Failing is sometimes the best lesson. If you just simply get out of the way. And what my dad actually did by letting me here drive into a snowbank. Now again, thankfully I wasn't hurt. Thankfully I didn't die. But just simply sometimes allowing a little bit of failure to just simply creep in. It sometimes is the best lesson. And God understands that the most. That's why God lets us choose. But he chooses the consequence. He lets us make the bad decisions. But he chooses what's going to happen because of those bad decisions. Now, we've seen why Abraham lied again. because he feared, because he didn't trust God. We notice that God judged him and God exposed him, but also God protected him. But now finally, number three, what can we learn? What can we learn from this story? You know, I think there's several lessons. Number one, I put down that we are going to continue to struggle. And we are going to continue to struggle. You know, I think, you know, whether you've been saved here for a day or you've been saved for a lifetime, much of your life, I've been saved for over 50 years. But listen, I'm here to tell you, you need to prepare for the next time that you're going to drop down and backslide. Backsliding, unfortunately, is the way that it goes. It's sort of like the rhythms of life. It's hard to stay right with God. It's easy to get away. It's hard to keep growing. It's very easy to go backwards. You know, that's why, by the way, the Bible even calls something, it calls it besetting sins. In Hebrews 12 and verse number 1, the author, I believe, Paul says it this way. He says, "Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses," he says, "let us lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us." You know, I'm reminded about this every single day. When I have aches and pains, some of you, by the way, you deal with arthritis and, you know, joint pain. And so what do? You take your supplements and you do your exercises, you stretch, you have all sorts of procedures. And then there's, you know, some that just simply live with it. And you just simply say, there's some things I can't do. You learn to make the best of it. You treat it as best you can. But you're sort of like, you know, the Tin Man on The Wizard of Oz. You need a little bit of oil once in a while. Now, the truth is, we have our flaws. And our flaws are going to make their appearance time and time again. And some of us, you know, it seems like we have a victory for a while. And that besetting sin, you know, boy, we conquered it. And then all of a sudden we fail and we fall. But that's why you and I, we need to recognize we're going to be living with this flesh. And we're going to have our struggles. And some of you this week, you know, it's a weekly cycle. And, you know, Sunday's a great day. And, boy, you have to be careful about this. Because Sunday's a great day because you come to church, you hear the Bible preach, you make some decisions and everything, and then Monday hits. And then all of a sudden it's a different story. You're back in school or you're back at work or that you're at home and all of a sudden you don't have God's people around you. Things are different. And you have to be careful about backsliding. And Abraham and Sarah, even though they had been with God, now following God for many years, they took a turn backwards. But here's another lesson. I wrote this down. God repeats all failed tests. He's going to repeat the test. In other words, when you refuse to deal honestly with a problem, God is going to bring that question back up. You know what? I mentioned that this wasn't the only time that Abraham and Sarah lied about Sarah. That happened back 23, 24 years ago. Why a repeat? I'll tell you why. Because they had not dealt with it properly in the past. That they hadn't gotten victory over it. That they hadn't gotten to the point where all of a sudden, you know, now all of a sudden they had dealt with it honestly before God and said, "God, we're sorry, and we realize we'll never do this again." No, they needed the test question brought up again. God is pretty persistent with his children. He's pretty persistent. Did you ever have your kids? I can remember, you know, with our kids, you know, sometimes we would have, and we were those kind of parents, you know, if they had food in front of them, if they didn't like the food at one meal, they got the same food the next meal. Any of you, your parents were like that? You know, if you didn't like the green beans now, get ready. They're going to be there for breakfast. And if you don't like them for breakfast, they're going to be there for lunch. And if you don't like them for lunch, they're going to be there. You may as well eat them now. They're in the best condition. They're going to be old and slimy and worse in just a few hours. You may as well get it done with now. You know, God is the same way. By the way, can I tell you, life has a way also. God, I believe, one of the ways that God repeats the test is by allowing sowing and reaping in life. What do I mean by that? You do know in the Bible that whenever there was a rebellious child, the way they dealt with it was pretty severe. But you know, a rebellious child, if they do not learn to submit, they're going to find a teacher that will make the lesson plain. And if they don't listen to that teacher, it might be a coach. And if they don't listen to that coach, it might be a teacher in college. Or even imagine this. They might say, listen, I'm going to join the military. Then they're really going to find out. And if they don't learn it that way, eventually here they're going to learn it through jobs, and they're going to all of a sudden lose jobs, that they're all of a sudden going to be in want. And if they're not careful, eventually here they can become addicted, and strongly all of a sudden they are overcome with such a strong addiction. Eventually here it takes their life. Now that's the sobering truth. And I've seen that happen. Kids that didn't listen, it will eventually catch up with them. Eventually here life is going to catch up. And I believe, by the way, that's exactly the scenario. By the way, if I can point out something as I was studying here for this lesson, to notice this, that listen, this is a pretty important thing. Did you know that actually you can notice this? Then notice what happens right after. And I believe one of the reasons why God was trying to get them past this problem, we know that Abraham and Sarah lied twice. There's no record of them lying a third time. Why is this important? Because the very next thing that happens in chapter 21 is Sarah, it says, conceives. We now have the birth of the promised son. We now have the conception. We've got the birth of Isaac. And I happen to believe that God was trying to get everything cleared out of the way and have them deal with their sin and deal with it once and for all, so that they could then become the parents of Isaac, the son that God had been promising for years. You've got to pass your test. If you don't pass it now, it's going to be repeated over and over again. But let me just say finally, that God's grace and God's mercy are seen. What can we learn from this story? I think in spite of all of the failures of Abraham, we certainly see that God was merciful. God was certain. You know, my wife, by the way, she defined me, I think, pretty well many, many years ago when she said, you know, I've observed about you that you seem to have a lot of mercy, but you only have so much. And she said, you sort of get sort of like you've got a rope of mercy, but your rope has an end. And she said, you know, I've just noticed about you that you give and give and give and give and mercy, 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 mercy. And then all of a sudden you get to the end of the rope. No more mercy. And she said, honey, I think that's you. By the way, not just me. That's also God. Did you know that God even said in Genesis 6 prior to the flood, he said, my spirit shall not always strive with man. Now you might be here and you might say, well, God's been merciful to me up until now. Yeah, but you better not presume that he's going to continue to be merciful. You see, there is a point where God says enough is enough. That is why this morning, again, that this is so pertinent to us, because basic Christian living is moving forward. And listen, I want to encourage you this morning to examine yourself. How are you doing in your Christian walk? How are you doing in your Christian life? Are you progressing? Are you growing? Is it greater in your joy? Is it greater in your prayer life? Is it greater in your relationship with Christ? Are you getting victory over sin, or have you hit the doldrums? Are you all of a sudden like nothing's moving? Well, that's the time you want to humble yourself and you want to say, listen, I'm going to get out of this. The doldrums are actually a dangerous place physically. They're a dangerous place because no movement means that you could be stranded. It means you could be stuck. And I venture to say there are probably some people, some Christians in their spiritual walk, their spiritual life, that have been sitting at the same place for years. Oh, it's an awful thing. I say to you this morning, anatomy of a backslider, spiritual doldrums, but let's not be satisfied to just simply be standing still. Let's press on the upward way. Let's have every head bowed and every eye closed. Have you been in the doldrums? Have you been just coasting? Have you been just simply not moving, not progressing? Have you been in a funk? Has it been that you haven't had the joy, you haven't had the growth? Has it been that you feel like, I'm not the witness, I'm not the a testimony, and again, it might even be that some sin has overtaken you, and during this year, you'd have to be honest to say, I've not been going forward. If you're not going forward, there's something wrong. You're backsliding. Backsliding is not just simply going back. It's not going forward. And so this morning, we see Abraham and we see Sarah, the anatomy of backsliders, that all of a sudden they got to that point again. Let's lie. Let's lie about who you are. Let's lie. Let's not tell the truth. And because they were afraid, because they didn't have faith in God. How big is your God this morning? Blue whales, they're there, but they just are rarely seen. Maybe God is the same way with you. I know He is. Our God is big, so strong and so mighty. There's nothing my God cannot do. Do you believe that this morning? If so, you and I need to just simply acknowledge Him and just say, God, I need Your help. I've been drifting. I've been just coasting. I've not been growing. I've not been progressing. This morning, I'm going to decide to get out of the spiritual doldrums. If God spoke to your heart this morning, maybe by the uplifted hand, I want to pray for you. Anybody here this morning, God spoke to your heart. You've been coasting. You've been just drifting. You haven't been progressing. There's been something. I see that hand. Anyone else? I see that hand there. I see that hand. Yes, several hands raised. God bless you. I see that hand. Anybody else? Pray for me, preacher. Listen, I think I've been coasting. It's time. It's time. It's time to get out of the doldrums. Anybody else? Pray for me, preacher. Father, you see these hands, and I pray that you'd even use even this thought that I had even this morning. Here's a couple that had been for years and years and years following you, but all of a sudden they took that step back. And all of a sudden a besetting sin came back. Got to lie. We're afraid instead of trusting you. You could have protected them if they'd have told the truth because you're a big God. But it's when we make God little and ourselves big, that all of a sudden the fears overtake. So Lord, I pray that you'd even use this message. And Lord, I pray you'd help us, every one of us, to examine ourselves. And Lord, if we're here this morning and we have not progressed, Lord, shame on us. Help us here to just confess and to get right and to realize we can make a new start when we acknowledge, when we turn over to you our life. Once again, Lord, take us and help us to grow in grace. Our heads are bowed and our eyes are closed and Christians are praying. Would you stand? And as the Lord may be speaking to your heart this morning, maybe you need to step out and come and pray.